microwaved coffee.
Kyle and I had a really funny bed situation happen to us the other day. So we ordered, I don't know if you guys know this, we've been sleeping on a futon, which is like the worst.
What?
Because we're not college students. Yeah. At our age, because we're not college students anymore. We can't really handle that. Like we had a mattress, but we had a mattress on top of a futon. And so I was like, we need to get a bed frame. Like this is ridiculous. This is getting really bad. So we bought a bed frame, and like every time I buy things for the bed, for the mattress, like sheets and stuff, I always buy the queen sets.
Yeah.
And so we got a queen frame. And then we go to put the mattress on it, and it's like short, like one whole side is missing, like it's like short. And Kyle's like, oh my God, we don't have a queen. We and he said twin, and I just kept going along with him. And I was like, that's not possible. Every time I buy accessories.
You have a full size, yeah. Right?
So it's like, every time I buy stuff, it's for queen. It has to be a queen. And he's like, no, it's not, Keyshawn. Like, look, it doesn't fit. And so I'm telling my mom, and I'm like, yeah. And I kept saying twin, twin, twin. And my mom's like, Keyshawn, there's no way you have a twin. And I'm like, yes, we do, Mom. And she's like, listen to me. There is no way two people fit on a twin bed.
Yeah.
And then she said full. And I was like, oh my God, you're totally right. It's a full. And then I just pictured Kyle and I on like a little race car bed.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, no. So now we have, so we got a new mattress, or we ordered a new mattress now. Oh. And I'm like, but yeah. So we've been trying to entertain ourselves, you know, switch up our room.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. Oh, have you guys been watching, or have you seen that the Ewan McGregor show?
No.
Where he's
no.
on his motorcycle, the motorcycle show. It's pretty good.
Nope. Has Vanessa seen it?
No, because it's on Apple Plus, right?
Yeah, I'm using Richard's.
Yeah.
Account. yeah, it's pretty good. It's through South America, so it's they left from Chile, I think, and then went all the way up. They're ending up in LA, and right now they're in Mexico.
Oh, cool.
Like the episode of, which I was like really excited about, but there's one thing that annoys me about that show, and they've done it in every, because you know how he had the other two shows you were telling me about?
Mm-hmm.
The one in
the long Asian way around and
yeah,
the long way down, I think.
Yeah. It this is one thing that kind of annoys me, is that they put this huge emphasis on safety, because they're trying not to go to like the touristy areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put this huge emphasis on like safety, but it kind of annoys me, because it's like, okay, well, there's dangerous places all around the world. And, like, nothing's ever happened to them. And obviously nothing happens, even though we haven't seen the rest of this show. Like, obviously nothing has happened to them, because we would have heard about it.
Yeah.
So I hate that they put such an emphasis on, like, oh, we have to be careful because this place is dangerous. And, like, I don't know. It's just, like, what if nothing happens, like, it's fine if you kind of preface it by saying, yeah, we like they were going through Africa, for example. And it's fine if you say, like, oh, yeah, we've worked with teams for safety reasons and to make sure that we're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to show, like, they did like drills where they were like prepping them for like dangerous terrorist situations. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, if nothing happened to you, you don't have to show that. Like, that's really not necessary. And so, of course, they're like, they're doing it with Mexico now, too. And I'm like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of annoying, because it's like, yeah, we get it. Everybody thinks that Mexico's a fucking war zone. Like, you don't have to, like, exaggerate it that much. You know,
yeah.
Like, there's also really dangerous places in the U.S. that I wouldn't go to. But yeah. You don't have to emphasize. And, like, one thing that was kind of good about it, I guess, is, like, the producer was annoyed when they were showing it, because they were showing them videos of, like, you know, cartels like kidnapping people and all this stuff. And they interviewed the producer, like, looked really annoyed, and they showed him by himself, and they kind of like did a little interview with him, and he's like, I don't know, I'm just getting annoyed with this whole like danger preparation thing, because he was like, he's American, the producer's American, and he was like, I know, I get it that there's dangerous places in Mexico, and he's like, but it's also a really beautiful country, and we don't need to feed into this, like, you know, like, dangerous propaganda of what. And he was like, it's not a big deal, like, nothing. He's like, if something happens to us, something will happen to us, but he's like, but we don't have to keep putting such an emphasis on like, this is a bad place, like, that's not the message I really want to send to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that kind of annoyed me, because I was like, okay, they've spent so much time, instead of showing us like all the places they've traveled to, they spent so much time like telling us how they're prepping to get through, you know, the country. So we'll see what happens. They're in Oaxaca right now in the show, so I'm really excited to see what they show.
Go eat some food and shut up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, and then, you know, like when they left, every time they do the show, you know, when they were going through like Mongolia, they were like talking about how dangerous it was, and then they left and they're like, oh my god, it was such a beautiful place. And then in Africa, same thing happened. They were like, it's so dangerous. And they got through and they're like, that was amazing. Like, what a gorgeous, like, continent. And I'm like, then stop fucking doing that. Like, stop just showing people that it's, like, bad. Just, like, show them the nice parts about it. And
or higher security.
Yeah, exactly.
It's higher security. And go.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess I'm, like, traveling vicariously through Ewan McGregor, because since we can't do it in real life. What have you guys been up to?
Oh, you know,
how are you entertaining yourselves?
Just work, sleep, video games, coffee.
Yeah,
I have Postmates. I've been kind of like just like looking for a job, and then basically planning. I'm trying to plan my next year, basically.
Yeah, I think that's all we can do right now.
Yeah, so I'm trying to like basically be like, what are the things I really want to do, and then how can I get there? So that's all I've been doing, really, is like just setting goals, doing these things, because like Vanessa's almost out of school in a month, I believe. Yeah, in a month, tomorrow will be her last day of school.
Wow.
Like on the 12th of December, she has to turn everything in on the 12th.
Nice.
She has her final next Monday, like this Monday coming up. And then she has to complete all her hours, turn in her project, like her big project that she's been working on for 3 years. I think that's it on the 12th, and then basically on the 12th, like, that's it. And then in January she has to take her license exam, and then hopefully she
in January already that. Did she schedule that or
no, because she has to pass. Okay. She can't schedule it until she passes. So
that's like passed, the first step.
Yeah. And because of COVID, it's not that hard, right? It's kind of like our certifications, like for IT stuff. Like, it's kind of a pain. It was a kind of a pain to schedule. And then when this whole thing happened, they were like, oh, you just schedule it and take it. And I'm like, why didn't you just do that before?
Yeah.
But so the same thing happened to hers. Like, her licensing used to be scheduled in different parts of the country, like one at a time. And the nearest one was going to be San Francisco. So we were going to have to go all the way to San Francisco for her to be able to take her license. But I think now she can just take it. She just has to set up like a webcam or something like that to show that she's not cheating.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. But anyway, I think she can just schedule it now, like a little bit easier. So she's thinking she's going to take it right away in January, whenever like it's available. And then
Like as soon as I let her.
Yeah, and then she could start looking for jobs. Yeah, no more annoyance of her being in school.
Yeah.
And then I get a break.
Oh yeah.
Because I've been doing everything.
And then you go to school. No. And then she does all the cooking.
Yeah, right.
She cooks cornbread every night.
Yeah, here's a sandwich.
Here's a sandwich. Here's cornbread. Some cereal. Yeah.
Here's some cereal.
Here's a cake.
Yeah.
Extra sprinkles.
Yeah. She'll clean, but I don't know about the cooking. But yeah, it'll be a lot easier because now the chores will be divided once again. Woo!
Woo!
Nice.
It's been 3 years of this. Partially my fault because I forced her to go to.
It's kind of crazy though, isn't it? Like, it's like, I mean, I'm sure for you it didn't seem like it flew by, but like, no. From my point of view, it does. I'm like, yeah. Wow, already.
Well, you went to Georgia, came back, did a bunch of stuff.
That's very true. Yeah. When you say it that way, it does seem longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you were still living at your parents' house because I was going to go back. I wanted to go back to school for a while. And every time I would say, I want to go back to school, Vanessa would be like, I have to go to school because I can't move up in position until I do that. And then I'd be like, all right, fine, you do. Yeah. And then she wouldn't decide because she was too scared until finally I was like, you can't watch Netflix, you can read books, you can't do that until you decide.
You can't read books.
Yeah, that was like the worst part for her. And then
it's like telling me you can't drink till you make a decision. God damn it, I'll do it right now.
Yeah.
It took her a week, I think.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she can't not read. It's like her thing. Yeah.
It took her a week, I think, and then she didn't know what school to go to, and then I was like, all right, you can read for like a few days, but after that you can't read until you pick a school. So like I basically forced her to, and now we're finally
done. good.
Yeah,
like tears of joy. But anyway, this is Microwave Coffee, and I'm Ivan Ortega.
Woo! And I'm Kijan Zundi.
And I'm Justin Park.
We have a topic.
What?
Yeah, it might be a long I like one. Actually went through it because I wanted to make sure I did it correctly, and I'm still scared I'm gonna screw it up. It's not like something crazy important. I just wanted to do something fun because our world is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Little break. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I actually told my teacher asked us last night, what have we been up to? And I actually said that I've been watching true crime to get away from like the news. And I'm like, that's how bad our world is that my escape is murder. Like, it's like that's what keeps me happy.
Yeah. So our topic. So I was thinking about it today and I was like, every time we do these, I try to trick you guys, but then we put the title of the topic. So, like, it doesn't trick the people listening. Yeah, so, I'm just like, whatever. So, I'm going to talk about Marvel comics.
Ooh!
Oh, nice.
Go a little bit about the history and how they kind of got here.
Kyle might actually listen to this episode.
No,
I don't think so.
We don't want you anymore.
Yeah, we don't need him.
Yeah.
Kyle. Jerk. If he does listen to this, I hate you. Don't tell him I said that.
Is he still alive?
You have to listen to it.
Yeah, we have to make him listen to it.
Yeah. All right. So in 1939, pulp magazine publisher Martin Goodman created Timely Publications. Basically, the sole purpose of Timely Publications was to start selling comics, because comics... By 1939, there was already a boom. It wasn't like he started a boom. He like made this because he was like, crap, like comic books are making a lot of money. I need to get in this.
Mm-hmm.
So that same year, they released their first publication, Marvel Comics number one, which had an android named the Human Torch. Most people know Human Torch from Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. But this was like the first version of the Human Torch. It wasn't like a real person. It was a robot that would save people. And then they had an anti-hero named Submariner, Namor the Submariner. They were like such a big hit, those two comics, that they sold 900,000 copies of it within the first year.
Wow. What year is this?
1939.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. At like, I think they were 5 cents or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't really say, but I do know they like, Marvel was like kind of the ones that would push the envelope when they would be like with price, like they would raise it like 10 cents or something, which was a lot, you know. But yeah. Anyway, within a year, they basically had a full staff because the first comics that they were releasing weren't published by Timely Publications, like they weren't distributed, I mean. Mm-hmm. So they had other people like investing also in it. By 1941, Martin Goodman hired Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, who created Captain America. Mm-hmm. The first issue of Captain America sold nearly 1 million copies. From there, they were kind of getting popularity, so they needed more staff. So Goodman hired his wife's 16-year-old cousin, Stanley Lieber. Do you guys know who Stanley Lieber is?
Stanley Lieber.
Yeah. As a general office assistant. So he was just like the office.
The intern.
Yeah, basically. He basically would get everyone coffee and assistant to like anything anyone needed. Later, he became a writer, obviously. Instead of using his name Stanley, he divided his first name into two, and he, you know, Stan Lee. So Stan Lee mm-hmm. is in his actual name. Joe Simmons became the editor between those few years and actually left in 1941, like around the same time they created Captain America. By that time, Goodman made Stan Lee the interim editor when Joe Simmons left, and then he actually held the interim editor position for a decade, wow. except for 3 years when he went to, he was in the military for World War II. I don't actually know if he went like to war. It just says that he was in service, in the military service during World War II.
So either way, he was like away from his work.
Yeah. So he, yeah, military for 3 years, came back, and he was still the interim editor. The Timely Publications published like comics, magazines. Goodman was kind of like an investor at that point too. He had a company of newsstands, because back in the day, that's how people bought their stuff, like magazine stands and newsstands, and mm-hmm. it was called Atlas. So obviously he would sell his comics at Atlas. At one point, he started putting the Atlas logo on the comics themselves as well, like to kind of promote it, but like to show that this is where they're being distributed, so people would buy from an Atlas newsstand and not a different newsstand. Mm-hmm. During the 50s and 60s, or not 60s, the early 50s, they moved away from like superheroes because they weren't as popular anymore after the war. Mm-hmm. So they started doing westerns and horror and like all this stuff that basically was like popular in movies as well. During that time, they had like vampire, you know, comic books and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
That's why sometimes you'll find like weird Marvel or Atlas stuff that's like, you know, Swamp Thing and things like that. Uh-huh. And they kind of suck, but people still like would read those things at the time. I think they kind of suck, but
yeah.
Stanley was known at the time. He actually said a bunch of things about working for Atlas and Timely at the time, saying that they basically, that their comic books weren't very good, and that the only reason the company was making money, it was because they were really fast at making them, so their turnaround was like really fast, so they were making a ton of them. But even Stanley like later would say that they weren't very good. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he was kind of a writer, but not really like as creative as like the Stanley that we know. Mm-hmm. In the late 50s and 60s, superheroes were kind of making a comeback. That was because of DC Comics. So like around that time, Superman, you know, Batman, all those like DC characters were really starting to become really popular. Mm-hmm. So in 1961, Stan Lee kind of revolutionized what a superhero was. He wanted to appeal to an older audience because, you know, Superman and Batman were like super campy and geared towards kids. So he, I think it was with Jack Kirby, they created the Fantastic Four. And they were kind of like the opposite of what superheroes were known for. So they didn't have masks. Mm-hmm. They would argue amongst themselves. They would hold grudges. And they kind of had like a celebrity status. Like in within the comic book, like people knew who they were, like the civilians and all that stuff.
In that world.
Yeah, in that world, yeah. Knew who they were. So they were kind of celebrities. And around that time, he also created Spider-Man with the same idea, but this time he wanted to gear towards teenagers. So he wanted to deal with like teenage issues, you know. Spider-Man always has like self-doubt and things like that, like things that were real emotions, I guess I should say, not real because, you know, he got bit by a spider.
Yeah.
That's real.
So yeah, so like during that time in the I forgot to mention, in the like during the time when they were doing westerns and horror stuff, people started to complain, like in the early 50s, about the violence in comic books. Stop me if you heard this before. So they created an organization called the Comics Code Authority, where they would basically create a set of rules to limit like how much drug use or violence or blood was shown in comic books.
This might be a dumb question, but is that still around?
It is. And
oh, it is.
The reason I wanted to get back to it was because it something happens a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's why kind of Marvel started to struggle like with their superheroes, and they went more like tame, like they started doing soap operas and copying DC, and like, cuz I think DC owned, or not DC, but like somebody else was like, Archie was popular around that time, so they had a character that was similar to Archie's. But when superheroes were becoming popular again, you know, that's when they made Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and Daredevil and all these more adult-oriented.
Yeah.
So Marvel often presented flawed superheroes, freaks, misfits, unlike the perfect, handsome, athletic heroes found in other comics, mainly DC. Some Marvel heroes look like villains and monsters, like the Hulk and the Thing. There was like a historian, Mike Benton, who said, in the world of DC Comics, Superman comic books, communism did not exist. Superman rarely crossed national borders or involved himself in political disputes. From 1962 to 65, there were more communists in Marvel Comics than on the subscription list of Pravda. Communist agents attack Ant-Man in his laboratory, Red Henchmen jump the Fantastic Four on the moon, and Viet Cong guerrillas take pot shots at Iron Man. So that kind of shows like that Marvel was trying to be more real. Like
they wanted to do real world issues. And
yeah. And I remember seeing an interview, I couldn't find it, but an interview with Stan Lee where he was saying that that's what he wanted to do. He didn't want to like just create a story for the sake of creating like a superhero story. He wanted the characters like to help people get through things, like see, like make them see like, oh, you know, Spider-Man also has issues, so you know, it's normal type thing.
I do remember seeing an issue, I mean, an interview with him where he was talking about that, where he said, like, people are getting upset because they were fighting Nazis or they were fighting other stuff. And he's like, but I think that's what we needed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can't avoid it completely because these comics were not necessarily just for kids. They were for everybody.
Yeah. And the same guy, there was another writer who wrote Jeff Boucher. He said that Superman and DC Comics instantly seemed like boring old Pat Boone, and Marvel felt like the Beatles and the British Invasion.
Huh.
Yeah, because Spider-Man and the Hulk actually appeared
see that.
In 1965. They appeared on Esquire magazine as the list of 28 college campus heroes alongside John F. Kennedy and Bob Dylan.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
So yeah, so alongside that with Kirby, Jack Kirby's artwork, which was like different around this time, like he kind of changed the way people were drawing comic books by this point. That's why he's like, I mean, alongside creating a bunch of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in 1968, while selling 50 million comic books a year, they changed the distribution for like contract with Atlas, which was basically his own company, and he sold Goodman sold Marvel to Perfect Film and Chemical Corporation.
What?
I don't know what that is, but they sold it to them, and Goodman remained the publisher. So he changed the way publishing was, you know, for Marvel would distribute it before selling it to these guys, so he would remain the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
In 1971, this is kind of one of the reasons why I want to talk about the code authority, the comics code authority. Mm-hmm. In 1971, the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare approached Marvel Comics editor-in-chief Stan Lee to do a story about drug abuse. So Stan Lee thought that was a really good idea, so he wrote himself wrote a three-part Spider-Man story.
Mm-hmm.
Portraying the drug use as dangerous and unglamorous.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the censorship of the Comics Code Authority, they refused to allow them to print it. Stan Lee ended up talking to Goodman, and Goodman said, print it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Spider-Man 96 through 98, so May through July of 1971, printed without the Comics Code seal on the cover.
So meaning that it wasn't approved. Like, it just shows that it's not approved by them.
Yeah. And it was such, like, a good storyline that the CCA ended up changing their policy.
Wow.
Because it like people ended up liking the fact that it was, you know, it was a good story. Like, it's like one of those things where, like, I feel like sometimes, I mean, we see it a lot now, that like people are so by the book that they can't sway like either way when they see something good happening. Like, you can't do that, like, because it's still illegal. You know?
Yeah, and it's very it's a very generic description for what you don't want. Like, your whole goal is to make people not want drugs, right? But you didn't think about the fact that they could be showing drugs in a bad way. It's like the fact that they're mentioning them at all is just bad.
Yeah.
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 So I thought that was cool. I had heard about that a while ago, but I didn't know that it had changed the way the rules were, which was kind of a good thing, because then that's kind of how we got the comics that we get now, where they're like, in the late 70s they became more adult. Like, that's when like the darker Batman, the one that we all like now, is like came out. Like, he wasn't as like campy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Miller, you know, in the 80s, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Goodman retired in 1972, and he appointed his son Chip.
Son Chip.
And the new head of the company. he named him the new head of the company. Shortly after that, I couldn't find out why, but basically the son didn't last very long, and he appointed Stan Lee as like the head of the company, editor-in-chief, and the head of publishing. In the 70s, because of the change of the rules, Marvel was also able to start selling like horror comics again, and they also started doing like franchise, like Star Trek and Star Wars and, mm-hmm. you know, all these like TV shows and sci-fi things that were popular in the 70s, which they weren't able to do before. Around that time, Marvel was still kind of behind DC as far as sales. And in the I think it was like 72, 73, they actually started selling more Marvel comics, and they actually had more money than DC by this point. And they've kind of been ahead ever since.
Yeah.
In 73, the company that they had sold it to, Perfect Film and Chemical Corporation, renamed their company Cadence Industries. None of that makes sense to me.
But yeah, I was like, okay.
I'm sure they had a good reason. and they renamed Marvel Marvel Comics Group. So when they were selling in, so like by that point in the mid 70s, selling in newsstands was not as popular anymore. So by the late 70s, like mid to late 70s, Marvel started to try to find a way to make other like money some other ways, because comics were kind of starting, like they were starting to see like the writing on the wall, like that comics weren't selling as much as they were before because they weren't as easily accessible. So they did like radio stories and comic strips. In 1978, this guy named Jim Shooter became Marvel's editor-in-chief. He was also a writer, I believe, but he was kind of a hard ass. And that's why they made him editor-in-chief, because people were starting to miss deadlines and, you know, like the company kind of felt like it was falling apart and they needed someone who was like a little bit more tough. So they hired him.
Well, especially, you know, at that time it was, if people were starting to do the more casual workplace.
Yeah,
and
that's
kind of like, we like can drink and do drugs at work and it doesn't really matter. And
yeah.
Like, yeah.
The Ataris and Apple and all those.
Yeah. Yeah.
In so nothing really happened by this point in time. Like they were still selling comics, you know, they were doing comic strips, which I believe I read somewhere that they're still printing the Spider-Man comic strip that they did, like three panels or whatever, mm-hmm. is still being printed now. Like they're still making it.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, you would think it would be like one of those rare issues, you know, only came out once.
Yeah, but it's like a three panel, like in the funny sections or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to jump to 1986 when Marvel Entertainment Group was sold to New World Entertainment, which within 3 years sold it to McAndrew and Forbes, which was owned by Ronald Perelman. Do you guys know who that is? Was a businessman. He was an executive at Revlon in the 80s. That basically, he was like the guy, you know, he made Revlon at that time. So this is kind of where, like, the story I think that I've told Vanessa, because she was the one that came up with this topic because I didn't know what to write about. She was like, you've told me that story, just tell it. Like, this is what I knew growing up. Like, this is more my era. So basically, Marvel was doing great. Ronald Perlman basically noticed that comics were doing really well in the 80s. They had more adult like comics. The artists were becoming like celebrities, you know, McFarland, Jim Lee, you know, like what mm-hmm. who was the other guy said, Frank Miller, all these people were becoming celebrities almost.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he bought the company, because it was public at that point, and so he bought he got most of the shares, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, the shares went up when he bought, and he ended up he issued a bunch of junk bonds that he used to acquire other entertainment companies. He basically spent $82.5 million.
Jesus,
that's crazy.
On purchasing Marvel Entertainment Group. And then
Why did the shares go? You're talking about the shares for
Marvel.
Marvel went up, and why is that? Is it because he's such a successful businessman that, like, in the business industry, he was known for it?
I think he was already known. Like, I knew his name because of Marvel, because he is not, he wasn't very, he's blamed for a lot of what's about to happen.
Uh-huh.
So people don't like him.
Yeah.
But he kind of had good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
He
kind of.
It didn't work out in the end because, okay, so I'm going to talk about it here. He bought a bunch of companies. He bought shares. After he became like in Marvel, with Marvel, he ended up buying shares for Toy Biz. If you guys remember Toy Biz.
Mm-hmm.
He snapped like a few card companies. Like, I don't know, maybe Justin remembers, but there's Skybox. There's like a trading card company called Skybox. He bought this company called Panini Stickers and distribution outfits like Heroes World. So he basically was trying to make more money for Marvel off of Marvel. So the acquisitions that he bought from Marvel, like with the Marvel name, he ended up spending $700 million.
Jesus Christ. This is now, what year?
This was in 90, probably.
Christ.
Because he bought it in 89. So like in 86, Marvel was sold to New World Entertainment. And then it was sold to McAndrew and Forbes, which was owned by Revlon, which Ronald Perlman was the head of. Right? Mm-hmm. So he was
making it.
It sounded like he was doing what he did with Marvel. It sounded like he did with Revlon and made Revlon money.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what he was trying to do was buy companies that would make money for Marvel and make Marvel more money. But they were all kind of related. Well, not all of them, but most of them were related. Like Toy Biz, he wanted to make toys based on the Marvel characters. And the trading card companies, he's the one that started the whole trading card thing with comics. With like comic book characters printed on them. So, you know, his ideas weren't bad, but his next ideas were.
Uh-huh.
So around this time in 90 and 91, Marvel started making special issues. So he would print all these special issues, and he started doing crossovers and, you know, futuristic issues, and then he would package them with cards inside. So if you wanted to collect all the cards, you would have to buy. He would make one Spider-Man issue that was a special issue. He would put a card inside, but there's five cards, and not every single card, you know, it's is in.
So wait, did you have to buy? Do I have to buy issues. The same? But multiple of the same issue?
Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I thought I have to have five copies of the same
of
thing.
The same comic.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But what a lot of people started to do around this time, it started to come out too that like people holding old comics were making money off of those old comics because people were buying those old comics for like millions of dollars. So because these issues were special, quote unquote, even though there was a ton of them, which made them not special.
Yeah.
People would buy these in bulk and hold them thinking in 20 years, I'm going to sell this issue for like millions and I'm going to be rich, which ended up not happening because they weren't special. Like he would make millions of these issues, which didn't make them rare at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So do you guys know who Neil Gaiman is?
Yes.
Gaiman is a writer. I'm not going to say comic book writer because although he writes comics, he also writes books and TV shows. And
you can also take his masterclass on the masterclass program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman is an awesome writer. He made this comic. If you read any of his comics, Sandman is probably his most popular one.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the show American Gods, which I think a lot of people like, it's based off of a graphic novel that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of pissed in 1993 at the comic book industry, specifically Marvel. He said, you can sell lots of comics to the same person, especially if you tell them that you are investing money for a high guaranteed return, but you're selling bubbles and tulips and one day that bubble will burst and the tulips will rot in the warehouse. He said this in front of a bunch of retailers. I think it was like 3,000 retailers. Basically, what he was saying is that Marvel was creating this bubble that was going to burst because the sales were fake in a way. So Marvel was saying, we're making this much money, but they're, once those people start realizing that they're not going to be making money off of these 20 issues that they bought of the same issue, they're going to stop buying. And so, like, the bubble's going to burst. As I'm...
Yeah, yeah. That
makes sense. Also, around this time in 1992, seven of Marvel's, like, most prized artists, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee... Todd McFarlane was writing Spider-Man. He basically is what made Spider-Man the Spider-Man that we like now.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to make Spawn. Jim Lee was drawing X-Men. Rob Liefeld, who created X-Force and Deadpool and a bunch of other, those are like the most known. They left and created Image Comics. So basically within the span of like a few years, Marvel was creating a bubble. They lost, basically the reason they were creating that bubble, they lost most of those artists. Basically, I think they left because they felt they weren't getting paid what Marvel was making off of the, so they decided to leave. So on December 27th, 1996, Marvel filed for bankruptcy in the US. The company was basically losing a ton of money off of everything, every other company that, you know, Perlman had bought. Yeah. And as well as off of Marvel.
So it was like, it was a trickle down effect. Like, yeah, they went down and then all the other companies started.
But it wasn't even like, it wasn't even like they went down. Like, it was like they woke up one day and they were down. Like, it wasn't like,
oh, like a, know, crash.
They were borrowing money. Funny enough, they owed, around that time, they owed Disney $1.7 million.
Holy shit.
They, jeez, had to fire over one third of their employees. So yeah, so around this time is what most people now, I think, have heard of because of the whole like Spider-Man movie thing. What happened was that the reason he filed for bankruptcy was because he basically started arguing with board members for Marvel because he wanted to completely buy out Toy Biz when they were losing money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everyone was like, you can't buy another company because we don't have any money.
Yeah.
And he filed for bankruptcy to basically push out the board members and be able to make decisions by himself.
Oh.
So he did that. He filed bankruptcy and ended up buying Toy Biz. In the acquisition, one of the board members started to fight back. Carl Icahn.
Mm-hmm.
I-C-A-H-N. I think Icahn. Icahn? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that dude.
One of those.
He ended up arguing with Perlman. And it wasn't like a nice argument. They were literally like arguing in the boardroom. But because they hired, I mean, they ended up buying Toy Biz. Toy Biz had a say in the way Marvel ran too, because they had executives, right? They had two executives in the board called, one of them, Isaac Perlmutter, and Avi Arad. People who like Marvel movies probably know or have seen the name Avi Arad in the credits. What ended up happening was Avi Arad and Perlmutter ended up kicking out Carl Icahn and Ronald Perlman from the company. So it ended up backfiring. Like, they were arguing so much that everyone got fed up with both of them, and it ended up kicking both of those guys out.
Oh.
Along with the CEO of Marvel, Scott Sassa, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they got rid of those two guys, which was like the best decision they could have done. Basically, Avi Arad got appointed to running the toy and like kind of like physical figures and things like that part of Marvel. And then Perlmutter was running like the company. And they ended up hiring back. They ended up hiring an old CEO for Marvel to run the company. Yeah, just because they needed help, because I mean, they were toy people, they weren't comic,
yeah,
people, but they did have big ideas. So Avi Arad ended up, around that time, he was actually part of the board for Marvel before the whole Toy Biz acquisition, and he helped make the X-Men TV series, which everyone loves. And with that, he ended up making the Spider-Man TV series, and he's the one that kind of brokered, like, at this point, Marvel didn't have any money, so they ended up making deals by selling the rights to movies, because Marvel had tried to make movies in the 70s and they all sucked. Mm-hmm. So Avi Arad sold, you know, Blade, X-Men, Spider-Man, oh, yeah, Fantastic Four, and a few others. Basically, they were trying to make money back. With this, they actually got, with like those successful movies, you know, he wanted Marvel to make their own movies, so he made Marvel Studios.
Mm.
And then with Marvel Studios, they actually got a loan to make Iron Man and actually a few other movies. They basically, at that point in time, had already decided to make 10 movies. And wow, they borrowed $525 million over 7 years to spend on 20 movies at $45 million to $180 million, which Kijan can tell you that's not very much. Per movie.
No.
Yeah.
Now that's like what you pay the lead actor.
Yeah. Basically. As opposed to like, well, not just that, but like those big sci-fi movies cost way more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So their idea was to make Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, and a Black Widow movie. Obviously, that all changed once Iron Man hit and became like a huge, huge hit. So Iron Man came out in 2008. I know I'm skipping like a ton of stuff because I didn't want to write every single detail of their transaction. Mm-hmm. Basically,
yeah,
comics are doing okay. They're not doing great in the early 2000s, like in general, like DC and Marvel weren't doing great. They decided to borrow this money. In 2008, they released Iron Man. It was a huge hit. And then 2009, Disney purchased Marvel for $4.3 billion, mm-hmm, which Avi Arad is quoted as saying, it's a cheap price. It's nothing. It's a very strong brand, and we planned on this brand. It wasn't a fluke.
Huh.
And now that you know, they really did buy it super cheap. Like $4.3 billion is like nothing compared to like the money they're making.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
When did they acquire? When did Disney acquire Marvel? You said 2008.
Oh, it seems nine, like.
So in 2008, Iron Man came out, and then because of Iron Man being so successful, Disney bought Marvel in 2009, which is funny because around that time, okay, so like. And I think it was like 2007. This is not something that's like in any article I read. I just, because I was like a huge comic nerd. Pixar was in talks to pair up with Marvel. This was before Disney bought Pixar. Mm. And they were actually going to start making movies. And I was like, that sounds like a match made in heaven to me. I love Pixar. I love Marvel.
Yeah.
It was going to... Wait. And then Disney bought Pixar.
I'm so confused. When did the Spider-Man movies come out? The original ones.
So the original ones with Tobey Maguire, I believe, was like 2000.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like really include those because...
So those had nothing to do with people being interested in buying the company? Like they didn't think that those were as successful?
No.
Or like who funded those?
Spider-Man at that point was owned by Sony, which uh-huh, it still is.
Yeah.
So because actually it's 2002. So in the late 90s, when they were trying to make their money back, they were selling the rights to the films for these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel sold Spider-Man and Fantastic Four to Sony. And they sold X-Men.
So they were selling individual characters and stories, yeah, opposed to the whole company. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So they were. Yeah, that's why Marvel can still sell Spider-Man comic books, video games, or whatever they want.
Okay.
Actually, not video games. Sony owns like the entertainment rights to Spider-Man, which is why the Spider-Man game is only on PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like they keep trying. So this is why. So a lot of people think that this is the sole purpose of why Disney bought Fox, but it's not. Disney bought Fox for everything else. This was just like the caveat.
Wait, they think that people think that they bought Fox because of Spider-Man?
Because of X-Men and all the characters that are in that universe. Like when Marvel sold the rights to Fox for X-Men, it wasn't just the rights to like the X-Men team. It was like the rights to every character in the X-Men universe.
Okay.
So that's why the movies that are out now, because Marvel didn't own the rights for those movies back yet. They don't say mutants in the movies.
Oh, interesting.
Because the mutant name is part of X-Men. So they were still able to use Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, who are technically mutants, but they didn't call them. They called them like gifted or something like that.
Yeah.
So like, because those characters are also in Avengers comics, they were able to use them, but they can't use like Wolverine or whatever, which now they can. And I'm assuming that's part of their big plan. But anyway, yeah. So the reason Spider-Man, the new one with the, what's his name?
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland is available is because they made a deal. Marvel made a deal with Sony to basically kind of split the earnings, which Sony is kind of like, they know they have the upper hand, so they kind of like bend it. And I think Sony makes more money off of the Spider-Man movies than Marvel, even though Marvel is making the movies.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So it's kind of the gist.
So what's your opinion on, do you think it's true what they say that, like, I know when Disney bought them and when they bought Star Wars, they were saying that they didn't want that to happen because it's going to be more family friendly. Like, in your opinion, is that true?
I think that the movies were always going to be family friendly. I think they're geared, like the Marvel movies are obviously geared towards kids. Because that's who is going to buy toys. That's who's going to buy, you know, pajamas and towels and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But and Star Wars has always been, like, I don't understand, like, the whole Star Wars thing, like, when people are just like, this is, like, kiddie, and I'm like, you need to go back and watch the, you know,
the original are so campy.
Yeah, you need to go back and watch the first ones with new eyes. Like, don't watch them as, like, this is what I loved as a kid. Watch them as an adult.
Yeah.
Watching a movie. And they are horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, they're bad. They're bad movies, but we love them because we loved them when they were kids. It's not like
nostalgia.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, like, to me, like, Ghostbusters was a good movie because it wasn't a kid movie back then. I just liked it as a kid. Like, now as an adult watching Ghostbusters, I'm like, well, I probably shouldn't have been watching this when I was little.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. And it's funny.
Well, you know, you get the proof when you show someone the original Star Wars that has not seen it, that they're watching it as an adult. There's your proof. Because what are they going to say? They're going to be like, it's boring. Like, what is this? What's happening? Yeah.
Like, Vanessa likes episode 3, which is like, you know, those are the ones that people don't like 1, 2, and 3. And those are the ones she likes because
you saw them as adults. I mean,
well,
you saw it at
3 that, but they're like, they're better, like, written, like, he was like a different filmmaker at that point. Anyway, but yeah, I don't think it'll change anything that would have already happened. Like, they're in the business of making money, and these are characters that are going to make the most money as kids. I don't think the movies are bad. Like, I really enjoy, like, all the Marvel movies, but they're just that, like, they're, I don't see them as like Oscar winning movies. They're just really entertaining. Like, they know how to, like, you know, bring everyone down and then everyone back up at the end. Like, it's just like a, you get that hype at the end, and then, you know, you're doing like, you know, cartwheels and kicks when you leave the movies. You know?
Like, yeah.
That's the whole point of
punch your friends.
Like, I don't think anything will change. I do, however, think that they're creating a bubble again, and when that bubble's gonna burst, I mean, I don't know. I see it coming. I don't like they call their movies in phases. Like phase one ended with Avengers Endgame, so all these movies were part of like a group of phase, and they're trying to make another one, and I don't think it's gonna work.
Why don't you think it's gonna work? You think people are gonna be sick of it?
Yeah, I think they're gonna create a fatigue, like the same thing. They're bringing more characters in. They're, you know, some of these characters are gonna get really old, you know, especially now with COVID. That's like a whole year that movies have been pushed back. Like the Black Widow movie was supposed to come out in February.
Yeah.
And they pushed it back. I think all of them got pushed back. Ant-Man got pushed back. I think what they need to do is start making TV shows off of these. And I don't mean like push TV shows down our throat. I think they need to do is, you know, the WandaVision show is going to come out on Disney Plus in December. And then after that, I don't want to see WandaVision or anything for like a while. Like they should just not do anything and then release something else, and then just give us like little snippets of like things. Like I think the movie thing is gonna die,
almost like a mini series. Like why don't you give us mini series?
Yeah, because
that way we can complete it and move on.
And not just that, like get really good directors and writers and make like a really good story, and then let it go. Because this whole like phase of like, because there's like a rumor that WandaVision's going to tie into like some of the movies that are coming out, and then like Doctor Strange, and then Doctor Strange is tied into Spider-Man, and there's like a rumor that they're going to try to do the multiverse like they did in the animated Spider movie with Spider-Man, and they're going to bring back like Tobey Maguire and, you know, all these like Spider-Mans, and I'm just like, just... I'm already tired. Like, you haven't even filmed these yet, and I'm already tired. Like
just hearing it, I'm tired of it.
Yeah, and I think they're gonna burn people out, which is, I think it'll be kind of good. Like, I kind of hope it happens so that people start going to see movies like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or like we get writers writing, because they get really good writers to write these movies, and I think that some of these writers have their own ideas, and I hope that they start funding those types of movies. I think it would be nice if like Disney took a chance on some of these like writers and directors that have original ideas. I've always wanted that, even like when these movies were popular and I go see and I'm part of the problem. But I like original stories more than I do movies based on books and movies based on like other things. Just like Interstellar is like probably one of my favorite movies of like the past 20 years or whatever, 10 years, you know.
I have to watch that again.
I think I watch it like once, like every once in a while, like I'll just pop it on because it's so good. Like, it just give me a good story. Doesn't matter if it's not gonna make you like I'm sure Disney can be okay by losing a little bit of money after they laid off like everyone at Disneyland. I'm sure they have.
That's funny that you've mentioned it, because I was just talking about this with Kyle before we started recording. Rachel sent me this really funny article from it's a new movie coming out that has Christopher Walken, Jamie Dornan, and Emily Blunt, and it takes place in Ireland, and they have like horrific accents, like horrific accents,
and I'm like,
no, like they're an actual like serious movie, and Irish people are like ripping it apart because they're like, what in the actual fuck? Like they're like, what is this accent? Like where is it supposed to be from? And I'm like, yeah, because you're getting fucking Emily Blunt and Christopher Walken to be Irish when they are not but it's because they want the money. Mm-hmm. Instead of like putting in a good actor that could actually do this stuff, they're like, no, we want the names. And it keeps getting them in trouble, and they just don't learn. Like, they put people who are not of a certain race in movies. and then people are mad. And it's like, stop doing this. It is not good. And you're also not giving a chance to these really talented writers and directors and actors because you're too busy being like, let's make a ton of money off of it. Like, I remember the Duplass brothers were approached first to make, I think, the last two Avengers movies. Straight up were like, fuck no. They're like, no, that's going to take like 4 years of our lives. We're not going to be able to make original stories.
Mm.
And so they were like, no, forget it. Because
unless you're like, what's his name? Who did Star Wars?
Abrams or like...
Yeah, J.J. Abrams. I don't know how he makes movies. Like, he filmed that, like, two movies while doing Star Wars.
Yeah. It's
how the hell do you do that?
Yeah. You have these, like, incredible stories. Like you mentioned, Interstellar is such an incredibly original story and so well written and so well directed. And you have all these people that can do this, and you're not investing in them.
I think the actors need to stand up for something too, rather than just take the money. Like, if Emily Blunt was like, why don't, like, I'm sure she knows some Irish actors. She should have been like, why, I'm not, like, hire this Irish actor. Like, she's
good.
Like, I think the actors and the directors and everyone fighting back to these studios who are just like, I'm going to put Emily Blunt because her last movie made $8 billion and, you know, I want to make half of that.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, you're definitely right. It's like, these actors that have so much fucking money, if you're an actor that's like starting out, I honestly don't blame you. If you get offered this part and you're not like perfect for it, it's like, well, shit, I'm a struggling fucking artist and I need money. I totally get it. But if you're Scarlett Johansson, could you just like back the fuck? Like, could you just be like, it's not for me? It's not like, I mean, you're making so much money and you can get any other part. Like, you're right. You should just be like, no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, that was really interesting. I didn't know. Yeah. I mean, any of that. Oh, it was really funny. I asked Kyle what, because I kept seeing the WandaVision thing. Mm-hmm.
You might actually like that.
Well, I asked Kyle to explain to me what it was about.
Yeah.
And he looked off and he like thought for a second and he's like, no. I was like, what do you mean no? And he's like, it's gonna take too much for me to explain it to you. And I was like,
she's a witch. Okay. Uh-huh. Like, her powers are kinda like, she in the comics, she's like one of the most powerful characters ever because she can basically make you think or make everyone in the world think something that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both kind of running away, and spoilers, if you haven't seen Avengers by now, you should just watch it, because if you haven't Vision, the male character in that show, dies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's happening, just based off what I know of the comic books, is that she's sad that he's dead, so she's living in this world that's fake, where he's still around. But the cool thing that I think you would like is that every episode is based off a different era of sitcom, and they're written and filmed in the way, from what I read, like, for example, the first episode is like an old-timey 50s sitcom, and they actually filmed it in black and white and in front of a studio audience.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, like, that type of stuff that they're doing with this show, I think, is stuff that you would like. I don't think you're going to care about the story, but basically she's living in, like, a self-created world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because I saw the black and white, you know, the cover for it was like black and white, and I was like, and it looked like a 50s I Love Lucy type thing. Like, what is this? And then that's when Kyle was like, no.
When it comes out, you should give it a shot. Just, I'd like to see what you think, because I think, like, the way they did it and the way they created it is really cool. Like, the fact that every episode's going to be like a different sitcom, or like what is it called? Like three camera, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think that is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Like a twist on like the on the whole superhero thing.
There's a twist at the end. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And The Boys too, if you haven't seen The Boys.
Oh my god. So Kyle has been begging me to watch that. It's just like
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's not like your campy superhero thing. It's like mm-hmm. more like everything that's wrong with the world almost. It's very relevant almost. Like it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. But cool. Anyway, you guys can thank you for listening, and you guys can follow us at Instagram at Microwave Coffee Podcast, or email us at microwavecoffeepodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, if I said anything wrong or if I missed something important, yell which I don't think I did because I'm pretty familiar with Marvel's story, yeah, email me and then I can update whatever.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you guys. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?